You're listening to The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, bringing class to trash since 1977.
This
all right, everybody, welcome to the Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema. We are finally here. Took us a little while to get together this week. We had some busyness happening. We got a little crazy, but we are back. How you doing, Will? Doing good?
I'm good, man. It's good to be back. It's back in the KY groove.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
That's, of course, a bluegrass reference.
That is. And speaking of blue, how about that for a segue?
Yeah.
Yeah. We are covering this week kind of we're taking a shot at maybe a new show sponsor. Maybe. We don't know yet. Don't know how it's going to work out, but 88 Films sent us some stuff. And one of those films happens to be what we're covering this week, which is a little movie known as The Blue Jean Monster from 1991. They put this out on Blu-ray. And, yeah, I can't wait to discuss this one with you because I think there's a few things to talk about. Yeah, we're going to get into some interesting stuff here, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And this one's not for kids.
No, it is not.
It's not. I mean, I guess to each their own. But I'll just say this. It would lead you to some seriously awkward conversation. I think you'd have some seriously awkward conversation.
Well, you just might, especially a few moments in particular.
Yeah, there's a couple moments. I'm curious which moment in particular got to you. We're going to find out. I don't really have too much this week, not feedback-wise. I don't think I have anything. We did get reached out by a gentleman named Steve who told us that he's going through some tough times too. And we just want to say, you know, Steve, hang in there, just like you're telling us to hang in there. And we'll tell you that on the air, buddy. And we do appreciate you reaching out. So
big time.
Yep. That will keep that one kind of quiet, but we want to acknowledge that he sent the voicemail. I don't know.
Yeah. And reach out, man. Reach out anytime you like.
Yeah. Walt sent some Chicago to us. So that's for Paul. It was a Red Waffle Paul, really into Chicago, watching a documentary recently, but nothing else really. But yeah, that's the big show. We're going to do 88 Films, Blu-ray release of the Blue Jean Monster, and we'll do a few other things that we like to do. So let's get into what we've been watching, what we've been up to. What have you been watching, man?
Well, it's been a minute since I've been here, so I've watched a few things. Let me see where I left off. I'm trying to remember where I left off. Did I talk about watching Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse? I think I did, right?
What was it again?
Something. Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse.
Yeah, I think so. I think because we said Ty Sheridan, right? I think we talked about Ty Sheridan.
Yeah, we were talking about good old Ty Sheridan. I'll just give it a little quick rep again for it. I watched it with my son, 13. It's got a few, unfortunately, vulgar scenes, you know, involving a zombie missing a lower half of his jaw and some oral enticement. But nonetheless, a fun film. I've seen worse and I've seen much lazier. It's got a good energy. But I talk about Hot Rod with Mr. Andy Samberg.
I don't think you talked about it. I mean, maybe you've talked about it in the past, but I don't think you talked about it last time you was here, no.
Yeah, so our youngest son's a big Andy Samberg guy, and I had owned Hot Rod for probably 10-plus years. Mm. Never pulled the trigger on it. I think you know what you're going to get with Samberg and friends. Danny McBride's in it, and Isla Fisher, Bill Hader. You know what you're going to get. Ian McShane puts in a pretty funny performance. It's fine. You know, it doesn't reinvent the wheel, but Sissy Spacek as well, so... You know, it's fun enough. Let me jump into May. So I've got some controversial opinions coming at me in May here.
Oh, here we go.
Not coming at me, coming at everyone else.
Uh-oh, here we go. What we got?
So I watched Love Lies Bleeding.
Oh, yeah. I know this film. Yeah. I know of this film.
Very buzzy film around these parts.
A little buzzy, yeah.
Yeah, well, I am here to say that... I think it's not that great, man.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, you know, this one, I wanted to like it. I did. I think Katie O'Brien's great. I think Kristen Stewart is her usual solid self. Ed Harris has the most impressive and yet disgusting skullet maybe in the history of cinema. Mm-hmm. But this film to me... And I really, and I truly, I gotta be careful what I say here because I don't want to step in it here and have this sound insensitive because it's certainly not my intent. Right. So let me put this out by saying this. I love that there is a lesbian love story at the sort of sweaty, pulsating center of this neo-noir. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I've always been an advocate for representation and everything that looks like, be it... gender, culture, et cetera. I'll always be a strong advocate for that. It's something I've preached to my children in terms of representation in films, be it, you know, things like superhero films and in films I consume without them like this one. But this one to me feels very by the numbers. It feels very sort of, what's the term we used to use a lot? It's like a prefab cult film to me.
Oh,
it feels okay. Like it wants to be Nicholas Winding Refn. It hits a lot of obvious visual beats, and it left me really underwhelmed.
Hmm.
Really, really underwhelmed.
Interesting.
It was fine. You know, I didn't hate it.
Right.
But I mean, I'd probably fall in like a 6.5 territory at best.
Yeah.
It just felt very by the numbers, very obvious. Like nothing felt.
That is interesting. Yes.
Profound to me. It just,
right.
It, one of those, I didn't get it.
Right. Right. That happens. Right.
Yeah. But again, flowers to Katie O'Brien. I'll definitely keep an eye on her.
Mm.
Next up, decided to rewatch The Hitcher.
Oh yeah. I've seen this one before.
No, I think of you with this one because I know you're, well, at least in terms of his creative output, you're a big fan of Eric Red, I believe, correct?
Yeah, I thought he was a real up-and-comer at one point, and he was. And then, you know, we've talked about it.
Things happen.
Bit. Yeah, some really crazy stuff happened, if you guys. Like I said, I won't go into it on the show. We didn't go into it back in the day, but just an insane story behind the scenes. And
that
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, but yeah.
That it is.
Good writer, good director.
So I think we did the only other vehicle that really popped for him was a Conan Tate. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
With Roy Scheider and Adam Baldwin.
Yeah, you may have been on the show. I think me and you and Todd did Body Parts. I don't know if me.
Yeah, I like Body Parts well enough.
Yeah. He's got a good werewolf movie too called Bad Moon.
Yeah, which I've actually never seen.
I think he wrote, Near Dark. He may have wrote that. So, you know,
well then.
He was really an up and comer there for a while.
Yeah, he definitely was. But and I hadn't seen this one. God, I was about 7, man. Like, I barely remembered any of it. I remembered the finale or, like, little bits of the finale. But I'd been dying to show this to my kids, especially our youngest, for a couple years now. Ever since it kind of popped back into my head. And I got to say, man, this, for me, has not aged very well.
Mm.
Again, I know a lot of our friends dig it. Howard's awesome. It's always the Howard Power Hour. Mm-hmm. But C. Thomas Howell, he's not. I said this to my wife when we were watching it. It just, it's one of those things, sort of like some of these actors you see, they get kind of buzzy and they hang around for a while and inexplicably they get cast in a few big films and then they kind of fade. Mm-hmm. He's not it, you know, he's not it.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I kept thinking that I almost would have preferred if this took a, and I don't want to spoil this film, but I feel like enough time's passed that I can say this, but I was almost wishing that this film had taken sort of a high tension twist. Hmm. You know, like it, to me, it just, I don't know, man, it didn't work. It wasn't coherent, cohesive. It's got a few good scenes, but by and large, I was disappointed, man. I wanted to like it more than I did on a rewatch. Mind you, it's essentially a first time watch because I was about 6 or 7. So
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's too bad.
Yeah. I like it quite a bit. I can't remember. I think Robert Harmon directed it, but I think it's written
he
by.
He did.
Her. Yeah. But I think Todd and I reviewed it a few years ago, 5 years ago or so.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
I got to go back and listen to your review then.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember what we gave it, but I remember we liked it. We had some issues with it. We liked it.
Yeah. It's weird. It you know, it gets a good thrust in scenes and then it just kind of feels dreamy and floaty in kind of the worst possible way. Like it, I don't know. I want to go listen to your review because I want to see maybe things maybe you guys like more than I did or things that you also had problems with. I don't think I've been in a crabby mood this week, but I don't know. Those two films kind of disappointed me, man.
Yeah, there you go. See Thomas Howell for the record, man. That guy, for somebody who was an it guy and everything else, I mean, that guy works a lot.
Still
working a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I mean, you know, a couple of things I liked him in, but.
Yeah. He never was a big movie star, but I mean, he's made a career. He's carved out a career for himself.
Well, we'll always have Soul Man.
Always have Soul Man. Yeah. Maybe the height. The height of C. Thomas Howell-ness.
That's it, man. So did that again. Decent, but I don't know. I would like to, you know, what more from it. What else did I get into this week? Another rewatch. I rewatched. Oh, no. First time watch. Orphan First Kill.
Oh, yeah. I told you to watch this. I wonder what you thought of this.
Man, I'll tell you what. We had fun with it.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. I think this embraces the trashy nature of it.
Yeah. And, yeah. It's not as good as the first one. I realized that completely. But it just goes for it in such a weird way.
Yes.
And it looks so ridiculous. Like all the scenes where she's supposed to be a little girl look so ridiculous.
She's clearly they clearly got like Julia Stiles standing on a box or Isabel Furman, I think. I think she's squatted down. Like they're pulling off some old school moves here. But I'll tell you what, I gotta give credit where it's due. Brayden and I watched the first one. It was a rewatch for me. I'd never seen this one. Him and I were home alone Friday night. He wanted to watch something. I said, hey, let's watch Orphan First Kill. Threw it on, and God bless this film, because you know what? The first one gets us with a twist.
That's right. Right? That's right.
This one starts, and I'm thinking, okay, here we go. Same beats. And God bless this one, because it hits us with a twist that you, I don't know, I definitely did not see coming, man.
I didn't see it coming. No.
No.
No. It's a pretty good twist. Yeah.
It's a good twist, man. It's a good twist. And it does that thing where it kind of tilts your rooting interest a little bit, not a little bit, a lot. Mm-hmm. And it embraces its sort of trashy, ridiculous nature and goes for it.
Yeah. It's good, solid trash.
Yeah. And now I really want to see Furman in that other film you said she was really good in.
Yeah, that's definitely not trash. Oh my God, what's it called? I can't even remember now. The Novice. There we go.
The Novice. Interestingly, the dad in this is a Sutherland. Did you know that?
Yes, I did. I did, actually, yes.
I didn't really recognize him, but I watched it. I thought, oh, cool. Last film I watched this week, another rewatch. This has been a long time coming. Everyone that listens to this, you especially know I'm a big Terrence Malick guy. I'd gone the longest time between seeing Thin Red Line out of all of his films. I saw it when it first came out. Mm-hmm. I was about, it just post-TIFF, I believe it was. I saw it. I was about 19, maybe 20. I was curious how, as a 40, almost 45-year-old man, the eyes with which I saw it and how it would resonate with me. And I got to say, by and large, it's still a really effective film. I don't think it's Malick's finest hour.
Yeah.
I do maintain that for me, it's, I don't want to say a better film because I think that's obviously a very subjective opinion, but this resonates more with me than Saving Private Ryan, which I also think is a very well-made film. It does that thing that Malick does where it's a very personal look at the price we pay, the piece of our humanity that gets taken in situations like this.
I need to rewatch it. I haven't watched it in forever. I haven't seen it since it came out.
Yeah, you know, so that was where I was at, right? And I'll say this, Jim Caviezel, I can't get on the Caviezel train with all the nonsense he's spewing nowadays, but it's just so out to lunch.
Yeah, he's out there. That's what I'm about. He's like the real life version of Orphan First Kill.
he lost me at the word adrenochrome. It's like, I'm out, man. I'm done. Yeah. Later, alligator.
Yeah.
But I'll say this for him. He's good in the film.
No,
he's really good in the film, and he's right in the thick of it with a lot of heavyweights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he goes toe to toe and has this really quiet confidence and sort of tranquility that allows him to run with Sean Penn, which, say what you will about Sean Penn as a, you know, some of the ill-advised sort of PR things he's done.
Yeah, he's kind of like on the other side of the coin.
Yeah. But again, tremendous actor.
Yes. Little cuckoo. That's all, you know, it happens.
Yeah, it happens. But Caviezel's good in this. Ben Chaplin, who I forgot existed, he also had a moment in The Son Is Kind of an It Boy. But
oh, yeah, that's right. I remember
Ben Chaplin. He's good in the film.
Yeah.
He's good in the film. Elias Koteas, another guy I really love. Mm-hmm. He's got a really good turn in the film.
It's a great cast. The whole film's got a great cast.
It is. Yeah, great cast. I think the film's excellent. You know, watching this, it really reminded me. Have you seen All Quiet on the Western Front yet?
The German film? No, I have not.
The German one.
No.
So watching this made me appreciate the craftsmanship of All Quiet on the Western Front even more, because to me that film really leans into its influences Come and See and Thin Red Line.
Yeah, nice.
And it's an excellent film.
Nice. Yeah, I'm going to watch it at some point. I don't know. I haven't been in the mood for a war film in quite some time.
No, I'm usually not either, to be honest. Because a buddy of mine, I watched this, he goes, oh, what do you think of 1917? I said, I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen 1917 either.
I've seen Dunkirk, but there's a lot of other ones I haven't seen either.
Yeah. I mean, I like war films. I just haven't been in the mood for the last, I don't know how many years now.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's the way it goes. But that was my time between shows. I maintain my love of Malick. I think when he's really hitting on the stuff that, you know, to some may feel very cliche, it stirs my soul, man. And there's scenes in this that I just felt completely transfixed by what I was watching. I just really into it, you know, just the power of film, man.
Yep, that's what it is. Speaking of which, I decided to use that power and go to comedies mostly while this week. I don't know why. I just kind of was feeling it. One kind of major documentary piece, and then another Ken Burns film, and then two comedies. Ooh. That both start with B, and both are, well, I'll talk about them. I'll start with one of the comedies. I watched Bottoms.
I was going to watch this.
Yeah, I watched Bottoms. It's pretty funny. It's, a couple young girls, they're both lesbians. They want to, you know, get with some other girls. They kind of find themselves lying and getting into a fight club for girls that's kind of sponsored by the school, with the supervisor of the fight club being Marshawn Lynch. It's a very, very odd film in that way. This has some truly funny moments in it. And it's very transgressive comedically, kind of like the other comedy I watched. So it kind of goes for it. It's not entirely successful all the time, but I did laugh quite a bit, and I would recommend people check it out. Quite funny, I thought. The other comedy I watched is one that I avoided because I thought it looked a little too broad. And I regret that now, because this movie was hilarious. I laughed my ass off at this thing. And this is Blockers from 2018.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
That movie made me laugh so hard, dude. There's some moments.
Yes, I love this movie so much.
It's so ridiculous. Can I just,
go ahead. Wait till you're done, then I want to give you a quick MVT and make or break.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. You can say what you want to say, because I'm just going to tell you that the movie is hilarious and it has some of the funniest bits. And even though some of the lines feel like they're improvised, I never felt the improvisation between the leads. And I thought that their friendship felt kind of genuine. And, the movie's just a series of, you know, unlikely events leading to comedic turmoil and things. But I like the way I like the way it handled its material. And, you know, I thought it was really funny. And it's, again, it's transgressive comedy. It's very aggressive, very adult. And I think it handled it well, almost like the Farrelly brothers at the height of their power.
Yeah.
But yeah, what's your MVT? And, I think you're right. Go ahead. Give it to me.
MVT is John Cena.
John Cena is great in the movie. He is.
MVT is John Cena. Make or break, two words. Butt chug.
That moment. That moment is classic. I love that it's not going in at first. And then it suddenly starts going in. You get to see his face. And then, of course, it pays off with the cops are here. And he tightens up. And the beer goes flying. Good, and the other guy's like, ass beer, ass beer.
Oh, God. It is good. Listen, you and I, neither one of us watch a lot of sort of mainstream comedies. And I think it can be a slippery slope. And it's funny because I had watched, to me, this is almost like the reverse American Pie, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And it's funny because we grew up American Pie. We were, you know, late teens, early 20s. We could relate to that at the time. That one hasn't aged very well in hindsight.
Most of them have.
And I watched it. Yeah. No, most of them haven't. See Revenge of the Nerds, et cetera. But this one, God, man, it walks that tightrope. And
it does. An alarm.
Like you, I loved it.
Yeah, no, it's great.
That was the butt chug alarm.
There you go. You didn't spit on it, did you? You spit on it? Oh, my God.
Everyone's got good moments in that, man.
Everybody does. Yeah, everybody's got a good moment there. Great lines, and it's incredibly funny. So if you've avoided it like me because you thought it was maybe too broad, do yourself a favor, check it out. It's quite wonderful and hilarious. The other thing I watched, much more serious note, I watched Ken Burns' film on Benjamin Franklin. Now, I won't say too much about this. If you know a lot about Benjamin Franklin, you know he's quite a creative guy, quite an interesting guy. You know, he had a lot of valid points, but, you know, if you look back on history and stuff, he also had a lot of points that make him not that shiny, if you actually look at him. Wouldn't say American hero, but at the same time, I wouldn't say American zero either. Mm-hmm. But what I did find out from watching this documentary is Benny was quite the ladies' man. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, nice. Speaking of skullets.
Yeah. Like, he is like the quintessential skullet. Yeah. And, you know, you got Ed Harris is rocking that Ben Franklin, yo. And,
oh, man, big time.
And the ladies loved him. I think it's because he was, you know, he was quite bright at a time when people didn't really push themselves to be as bright as that. He was like massively curious, which is why he, you know, had so many inventions and so many crazy things he came up with. I mean, the guy created everything. He created a musical instrument. He created bifocals. Like, he discovered the powers of electricity. He was a master printer with a printer press. I mean, this guy was all over the place. And it's pretty insane when you go back and watch that. But, yeah, had no idea he was quite the ladies' man. So, as you find out with most things in history, everybody has a weakness. Old Benny's happened to be, you know, that one thing that is a weakness for most men. So, there you go. But that's quite enjoyable. It's about 3 hours long. Of course, it's, you know, aired as a TV show, as these things often are now, because nobody wants to watch a quote unquote 3 hour documentary, but I count it as a film because it's Ken Burns. And if you've ever seen Ken Burns stuff, you know how, you know the motif and you know what he's going for and what it looks like. And it's definitely, you know, the minute you start watching, like, oh, wait a minute, this is a Ken Burns film. So, you know, immediately his documentary style is he definitely has a style. Which I kind of appreciate because there's not a lot of auteurs in documentary world. But he is the ones that are very interesting, I think, anyway.
No, I agree.
But that's all I watched, man. That was it. I mean, Ben was, I think, you know, if I didn't know any better, I think Ben carried around a timepiece or two. Back then, they carried him around a little hand watch, a little pocket watch.
You know, he had the pocket watch skeleton combo going hard, man. The dangle on both is impressive.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I never thought the word dangle and Ben Franklin. Oh, Ben Danglin' Franklin. Danglin' Franklin, that great third baseman for the Mets in 69. He was there. You know what time it is, Will?
What time is it, Sammy?
It's time for this or that. Danglin' Franklin.
Moi, je joue. Moi, je joue à joue contre joue.
You see, I never know what we're going to come away with any given episode. And there we go. Another surprise in the Danglin' Franklin. That's a new one for me.
That Danglin' Franklin.
It, for whatever reason, it rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, it does.
That's what the ladies of France.
Man, we got a nighttime recording right now.
Obviously. Obviously. Clearly. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, man. What you got?
Okay. I'm going to come out strong, man. I'm going to come in hot with this one.
Oh, boy. There we go.
More enticing threesome. David Hasselhoff and Tina Turner or Rick James and Linda Blair?
This is so stupid. I don't even know where to go, because in my head I'm picturing looking across at the individuals, you know, and I don't know if I want to look at David Hasselhoff or if I want to look at Rick James. And I got to tell you, nowhere in my lifetime have I ever had the fantasy of looking at either one of them in that capacity. So, yikes. You know what?
Yowza.
Yeah. Oh, this one.
Oh, man.
Speaking of dangling, this one, I think I'm going to. So stupid. I'm going to have to go Blair James on this one.
Amazing, man. You can do the Fire and Desire duet with Rick James for Linda Blair, man.
Yeah. Well, and most of this comes from my teenage crush on Linda Blair. Which I had a huge one. Not that I have any problem with Tina Turner. I do not, nor do I have a problem with David Hasselhoff. But, man, I loved Linda Blair, especially, this sounds so terrible to say. And Linda, if you're listening by any chance, those cocaine years were wonderful years for you.
Man.
You were a beauty. But anyway, there we go. That's what I'm going to go with. Man, that would be, I'm just going to say this too. That would be a sweaty night.
Oh, man. Lots of coke sweat that night. Son.
Oh, my God. Rick James would never let us go to sleep.
No, man. Rick James ain't letting anyone sleep, man.
No. I'd be scared. He'd probably lock us in, keep us. That's a bad joke, but I mean, it's the truth. I'd be scared.
Oh, man.
So you're Rick James and Linda Blair, too, huh?
No, I am not.
Oh.
Plot twist.
Ooh.
Hoff is the weak link in this bunch.
Man.
Okay? I can't get down with the Hoff, man, but he's a fraud. But I can't get down with Tina.
Yeah. In a
God bless.
In an orphan-like twist, you went the other way.
Yeah. Listen, my love of Tina is strong, man.
Yeah. No. I got you. I can't deny it. I think the Hoff.
Swap out Hoff for Rick James, I would, but that's not this or that.
Yeah, that's true.
So I got to go Tina, man. I got to go Tina and the Hoff.
I mean, you could be humming the Knight Rider theme the whole time you're doing that. I think you'd be okay.
I want the Hoff to have that fake, the mustache. He was like the villain on Knight Rider. He's got to rock that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the fake Michael Knight or whatever his name was. Yes.
That's got to be the look if he's going to have to enter the room, man.
Did he have a different name? I don't know if he did.
I feel like he did.
Man, and I'm really losing my cred card here with not knowing my Knight Rider.
The Knight Rider. Knight Rider, yeah. Okay, so we'll get one of our fact checkers to check that, and I'll hit you with the next one.
We'll get some more research done on that one, yeah.
Yeah, so would you rather wear – do you have any before I – keep going?
I do not have any. No, I wish I did.
We'll keep it to five, or maybe depending on length, maybe three to five. Would you rather wear a leather Coolmodi hat and leather Coolmodi hat and sunglasses, and play "I Go to Work" every time you go to work, like when you enter the building at work?
Entrance music. Okay, I got you. With the costume.
Entrance music. Okay. But that outfit stays on. The sunglasses and hat do not come off.
Okay, the Coolmodi sunglasses, right? I mean,
Coolmodi sunglasses.
Because those Coolmodi
are leather hat.
Yeah, those that's a unique look, right?
They're almost like Pit Viper-esque.
Yeah, there's only two people that could ever rock those kind of sunglasses, and oddly, one of the other ones was Andrew Dice Clay.
Andrew Dice Clay, Bret Hart, maybe a little bit.
Oh, yeah, maybe Bret Hart a little bit. Although he eventually went to that kind of cheapo Oakley look.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He did.
Not the real Oakleys. Those look fine on him. I'm talking about the cheapo ones he would use.
So. The ones that he would just toss into the crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Coolmodi leather hat, sunglasses, "I Go to Work" is your entrance music for work every day.
Okay.
5 days a week. Or every first date, you wear a double-breasted suit with shoulder pads. You play "Color Me Bad's I Want to Sex You Up." You wear a silk shirt, and you have to keep the chin strap impeccable, the chin strap beard impeccable.
Well, you know, this sounds like it would be a difficult choice, but to be honest with you, I think I got to go with the Coolmodi look on this one. Because the hat's unique. The glasses are unique. At this point, I know I'm going to rock the cowboy boots.
Yep.
And even though that song will be playing, it'll be hard for me not to, you know, every day go the wild, wild west.
That's right.
So it'd be.
That's right.
I'm going to have to go Coolmodi on this one. I might even get some Jerry Curl juice out on that one.
Okay. I'm with you, I think.
Although I wonder about that Jerry Curl juice on that leather. But anyway, go ahead.
That's a bad. Man, I got too many alarms going on, man.
You got a lot of alarms going on tonight.
Good Lord.
What are you doing?
I'm with you. I can't. You know, as much as I'll still unashamedly play Color Me Bad. In fact, that's what prompted this. It popped into my head. I thought of you in the suit with the chin strap beard.
Yeah. Yeah. My falsetto rocking. Yeah. I got you.
Yeah. Those round sunglasses. Amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was back when people had that hair that kind of went up to a point and it was a frosted. It wasn't frosted tips. It was a frosted tip.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
Him and MC Snow.
I got to go. Yeah, that's right, man. I got to go, but I got to go the Coolmodi.
Yeah.
We're going to simplify things a bit. Italian sausage with peppers and onions or Polish sausage with mustard and sauerkraut?
I love both of these. I love both of these a lot. But I had one of these more recently than the other, so I'm going to go with it on that regard, and that's Italian sausage with peppers and onions.
Yeah.
If you could throw some eggs in there too, it's even better. But
correct answer.
Man. Yeah, that is some good eating right there. And Troy knows what I'm talking about. I had one in Philadelphia. Had some sausage and peppers. It was to die for.
Yeah, that's another level, man. Both are good, but I'm with you, man. Italian sausage with peppers and onions.
Yeah. Delicious.
It is. You go to work on that Italian sausage, man.
Yeah. Wild, wild west.
That's right. Michael Keaton or Fred Ward?
Oh, well, this is tougher than I would imagine. You know, this is interesting. I am one of the world's probably biggest Michael Keaton fans. I do really like Michael Keaton a lot. I think he's generally funny, and I think he can really act.
Mm-hmm.
Like all actors, he has his, you know, his peculiarities that he always does. And so does Fred Ward. This one's actually a lot tougher than I think. This sounds like GGTMC heresy, but I'm going to go Keaton on this one. Yep, I'm going to go Keaton on this one. Definitely going to go Keaton.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I love Fred Ward.
Yeah.
But I think pound for pound, Keaton's a little bit better of an actor.
He is. And there's something about him that just seems a little, you know, the famous line of "you want to get nuts, let's get nuts."
Yeah.
There's something about Keaton that seems a little, and I mean this in the best.
Go over the edge.
Yeah, there's always something about him that seems like he could just go over the edge at any point.
Yep.
I don't think he uses that to his power enough. I don't think he works enough, but I think that's a choice. But either way.
No, I'm with you.
I like him quite a bit.
I'm going to have a follow-up Keaton one next week, I just thought of.
Oh, okay. Good deal.
Last one, Battle of the Gingers. Battle of the Contemporary Gingers.
Okay.
Jessica Chastain or Amy Ryan? Is Amy Ryan?
Amy Ryan? Yeah, I think it's Amy. No, not Amy Ryan. It's Amy Adams.
Amy Adams.
Okay.
Amy Adams. Yeah.
Amy Ryan is the blonde Amy.
Who is lovely, by the way.
I think they're both in Gone Baby Gone, if I'm not mistaken. No, they're not. Amy Adams is in that Mark Wahlberg football movie, I think. Or no, she was in The Boxer. Or, was it The Boxer? With Mark Wahlberg and... Look, we got to stop talking about other movies because clearly we can't remember anything anymore. Amy Ryan, yeah, Amy Ryan,
Amy Ryan or Jessica Chastain.
I'm gonna go Jessica Chastain. I've really come to love Jessica Chastain. She's I've really come to love her quite a bit. There's something about her she's unconventionally pretty, first of all, and yeah, I'm a fan. I don't really have much more to say than that. She's good, man. Just about everything she's in.
Yeah, I am completely and utterly with you. Jessica Chastain, to me, I saw in something recently. Okay, man, enough with the alarms.
What you got going on, man? You making a banana bread? What are you doing?
You know, man, it's one of those things where I got so many things on the go. I'm always setting alarms. That was the clean the dog dish, the daily clean the dog dish. But I love Jessica. I love Jessica Chastain. I think she's one of the better contemporary actors. I love the people she works with. I think she's great. I think that Amy Ryan is also a fine actress, but Chastain, for my money, really moves the needle. I think she's tremendous.
Mm-hmm. And she's getting better.
And what did I watch her in recently? I think I saw her in Interstellar, which, you know, maybe not her greatest turn, but it reminded me of her because I hadn't seen her in a few years. And I was like, oh, man, I love her. She's fantastic. Yeah.
She's getting better as she goes along, too. That's the other thing about her.
Yep.
So is Amy Ryan, for the record, but... Yeah.
Yeah.
She's really grown on me. I didn't really like her at first. I've just
kind of, Amy Ryan?
No, Jessica Chastain.
Chastain.
Yeah, I thought she was kind of vanilla at first. But I've come to really change my tune on that.
Oh, she's great.
All right. So that it for this and that? This or that.
Man,
this
and that. That is this and that.
This
or
and
that.
This and
you decide.
This and or that. There you go. And relax. Slash Thor or I said Thor. Jesus. We can't record at night anymore. Clearly.
It's wild times, man.
We've lost our minds. I got to set an alarm to learn how to speak English. all right. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back and talk about the Blue Jean Monster from 1991. We'll be back right after this.
Down on the corner by the traffic light, everybody's looking as she goes by. They turn their heads and they watch her till she's gone. Lord have mercy, baby's got her blue jeans on. Up by the bus stop and across the street.
It's amazing how many songs have the words blue jeans in them. So I had many to choose from, but I thought, well, this little country pop cheesy ditty from back in the day that I used to listen to.
There amazing.
We go. Baby's got a blue jeans on. There we go. All right. So we are back. We are going to talk about a little movie called The Blue Jean Monster. Now, this came out in 91. Hong Kong was making a lot of interesting films back then. They were just kind of going for it left and right, wouldn't you say?
Oh man, this was a golden time.
Yeah.
For Golden Harvest.
Yep. It was a great
Hong Kong.
Yeah. It was a great time. This is directed by Kai Ming Lei, something like that. Listen, man, I'm telling you, we can't record tonight. Clearly I cannot talk, enunciate, or do anything correctly. Even though I did say I did say enunciate correctly the first time.
There you go.
Can't go for it twice, though, clearly. Plot synopsis. A cop gets buried under steel rebars while pursuing triad bank robbers. This is the least organized triad ever. Through a construction site. He gets reanimated supernaturally and becomes invulnerable, but needs electricity to remain alive and goes after the gang who killed him. So this movie kind of, on its surface, it's a Frankenstein riff. But it's kind of so much more than that. It's not a deep film, but it is, it is a trashy one. This one, I guess we said the director. This one stars Fu Hanqing, who you probably know, character actor. Didn't live very long, but he's got one of the more memorable faces. What would you say you know him the most from?
Well, he did a lot of heroic bloodshed stuff.
Yeah. He definitely has.
He's been in so much. This is fun fact too. This was his only leading role. He did, I think, 240 films, roughly 237. So yeah, The Killer, Better Tomorrow, Better Tomorrow Two, yeah. Ebola Syndrome, Untold Story, God of Gamblers, maybe might be the most famous. But look at this. Look at this filmography. Plus Prison on Fire, Tiger on Beat.
Yeah.
Magic Crystal with Richard Norton, The Young and Dangerous series. I mean, on and on and on.
Yeah, he's. If you see his face, you will know him.
You'll know him. And he's sort of like the Hong Kong Michael Constantine.
He kind of is.
Maybe.
He kind of is.
Yeah.
The only thing I never liked about him is I always wished, I'm kind of glad he didn't because it made him unique, but I always wished he would get his teeth fixed. His teeth were always stained. Well,
that was a sign of the times.
Yeah. They were always kind of stained and whatnot. Also, Sifung Wong. A lot of these people I know them.
AKA Pauline Wong. Yeah.
Yeah. Gloria Yip's in it. Yep. She's in here. Yes. There's somebody else in here I wanted to mention.
I'll tell you who it is.
Go ahead.
Jun Kunimura, Japanese actor. It's like he's the head of the gang. It's like, wait, is that Jun Kunimura?
Yeah.
Japanese actor in a Golden Harvest production in 1990.
Pretty crazy.
Just wild.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. Now, this movie. Will, I don't know when's the last time you saw it or if you've ever seen it.
Never had seen it.
Okay, well, this is going to be fun then. What did you think about Blue Jean Monster?
Well, for better or worse, or for better and worse, it's a very 1990 Hong Kong film.
Yeah, that is one of the most accurate descriptions of it I can ever think of.
Definitely.
The 90s so sweaters and costumes are, you know, the fashion. Wow.
Oh man, the subtle acting, the tonal sort of whiplash.
Oh, this one's all very, yeah. This one's considered a comedy in some ways.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
in a Hong Kong sense,
in the sense of Asian cinema, it is a comedy.
Yes, it totally is.
But I would just warn folks who would watch this: if you're sensitive, you may be a little turned off by some of it because it's not sensitive.
Nope. As Hong Kong was not at the time.
Very blunt.
Very blunt indeed. So a couple of things I want to get out. So good on Fu Hanqing, you know, starring role. He did almost 240 films. The only film he led. It's a goofy film. It's a silly film.
It's one of those goofy supernatural Hong Kong films.
Yes. But God bless him for being as likable as he is.
Yes.
Right? He brings a certain likability and sort of everyman earnestness to the role, which is remarkable because you kind of lament the lack of opportunities for him to do stuff where he could, and this is going to sound odd considering we're talking about this performance, but that could have allowed him to stretch his legs more dramatically because he was always playing a heavy because he looked like a heavy.
Yeah, so that's the other thing. God bless him for being so likable in this film because, I mean, he does not have a, and I don't mean this in a bad way, he just doesn't have the face for likability. He doesn't have that face.
No, he has a face of a heavy.
He has the face of a heavy.
Right?
Yeah.
Face of a heavy. What else? So Pauline Wong is in this, right? She's his wife.
Yeah.
Man, I'll tell you, Pauline Wong always, and she's done a ton of stuff like Peacock King and Mr. Vampire, Twinkle Twinkle Lucky Stars, etc. She always reminds me of Anita Mui, who, you know, gone way too soon. I think she was about 39, 40 years old when she died. Mm-hmm. Just a tremendous loss, but she always reminds me of Anita Mui a little bit.
She does. As a matter of fact, I had to go back and look because I thought this was Anita Mui. While I was watching it, I was like, oh, there's Anita Mui. It's not Anita
And I've
Mui.
Always found Anita Mui and Pauline Wong beautiful.
Yes.
I found very beautiful.
Yep.
I got to get this out of the way. Why Kitsy might be, no, is the worst character in the history of cinema.
Oh, power steering?
Yes.
Yeah, the young character, yes. And he has some of the best, gross out moments in the movie, too.
He does have some really good gross out moments, but I'll tell you what, he's the worst character in the history of cinema.
You mean the character of Power Steering?
Correct.
Yeah, because
Power Steering is just Oh man,
he is a character that you want to go away as soon as possible,
as fast, right from the get go.
Yeah,
right out of the gates.
I think the only thing that saves him is that he is the butt of the jokes when it comes to the gross stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of should say that at some point. Well, we'll talk about it a little bit, but at some point there's some body transference horror stuff going on here with some undigested food and Power Steering re-eating that food. The noodles really turned me off.
Yeah, they did. You know, it's funny. This film is very Hong Kong, but I can't help but think of something like this is to Hong Kong youth what sort of the trauma films would have been in stateside.
Yeah. You know, when I think about Category 3, you know, trauma was going for more absurdity, but
which this is.
Yeah, this is. But Hong Kong did it kind of differently. And I think it kind of, well, I mean, I like trauma more than you do, but because it captured a moment in time. And that's what I like about trauma a lot. Some of the films, not so much. There's only really maybe a handful of trauma films I really like, but they did capture a moment in cinema history. You can't deny them that.
Undeniable.
Yeah. And the same thing with Category 3 stuff from Hong Kong. It captured a moment in time. It didn't last, which is in some ways kind of unfortunate. I kind of wish this kind of transgressive bonkersness still existed. And I know there's a lot of up-and-coming labels right now, DVD and Blu-ray-wise, that are trying to get this stuff out because it's, for years, I mean, we've talked about Category 3 stuff in the past, but for years, this stuff has kind of languished in torrent world. And now we're starting to see remasters, which is just insane for the record. I know you got to agree. We're seeing remasters of these films.
Oh, man. To be honest, a lot of these films, because this isn't sort of, you know, if you were going to do like a draft of, you know, the 100 greatest Hong Kong genre films from, say, the mid 70s up until about maybe even up to the mid 90s, that 20 year span. You'd get a lot of films in before the Blue Jean Monster would come up. But we're at an age right now, a golden age, where, you know, I only thought I would only ever see this film through kind of a torrent with some, you know, fan subs.
Sure.
You know, because it's a bit of a deep cut, right? And good on 88 Films for doing this, putting together what by and large is a pretty good looking transfer. And it's, you know, we've been grateful as film fans and film fans of films from around the world to see a lot of this more esoteric kind of bonkers stuff get loving releases.
Yeah. It's a great time for it. And I know we say that a lot as movie fans. But you know, you guys got to remember when this show started, I mean, a lot of this stuff was not available and there was no hope it would ever be.
Other than a few sites that shall not be mentioned.
Yeah, that. And then, of course, there was the
VCDs.
Maybe the ones that starred or were a director was attached that went on to some prominence.
Yeah, your Choi Hawks, your John Woos,
yeah, people
Ringo
like
Lambs.
Yeah.
You know, people with a certain amount of cachet internationally, right?
Right.
You know, but in saying that, yeah, listen, say what you will about the film, but, and this is a sort of different Category 3 film than a lot of them, because like we said with a few other films that he was in, like Untold Story and Ebola Syndrome, those really earn their Category 3 rating.
Yeah.
They are just gross, vile. And I say that in the most loving way.
Yeah. I mean, they're, I guess you could argue that Untold Story, or maybe Ebola Syndrome, one or the other, you could argue is kind of maybe the height of how far they would go in some ways.
Well, I was trying to explain to a buddy of mine, you know, not that the Rape by an Angel series is as intense as its title would suggest.
Yeah.
But I said to him, I was trying to explain the whole concept of Category 3. And I said, there's a series of films called Rape by an Angel. And one of them is called, I think it's like Rape by an Angel 6 or something. I don't know. I could be wrong. Rape by an Angel. Rapers Union. Rapers Union.
Yeah.
Wild.
Well, I mean, you got to unionize.
You know.
You got to protect your workforce, man.
You know.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what the fees are for that union. I'd hate to find out, but wow. Yikes.
Yeah.
And you know, we've talked about some of these films, right? But I mean, also this director, you know, he did a few of these kinds of movies, like Ancient Chinese Whorehouse. He did one of the erotic ghost story films, Peep and Tom, which I've never seen, but he did The Imp, which I think we've talked about maybe covering at some point, or maybe we did cover it. I can't remember.
Yeah, The Imp's one that I know of his that it's a pretty pretty well known, right? Yeah. I feel like, did we do The Imp on like a...
I feel like we did The Imp, but I don't know if we did, man.
Like on a Halloween episode or something? Or
it feels like something we've done.
Yeah, it does.
It really does. If we haven't done The Imp, we should do The Imp at some point. So he's got a few good films in his filmography, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna look at. Oh, I know, sorry, I hate to do that while we're on the air, but I'm going through a spreadsheet and I'm looking to see if The Imp is on here. Because I feel like, yep, we did The Imp. It was a midnight ride. There you go. That was you.
Yeah, I thought it might have been Midnight Ride.
Yeah, that's you, brother.
Yeah. Okay. So there you go. But so this film. Yeah, it's a moment in time, right? And I mean, it's wonderful to see Hong Kong and all of its 1990 glory.
It is,
right? And everything that means, whether it's fart jokes, whether it's really incredible, visceral shootouts and car chases. And that's kind of the charm of something like this, is while this may not be the most impeccably made or perfect Hong Kong film, I mean, it encapsulates in some regard a lot of the things we love, you know, shifting from a really intense, squib-heavy bank robbery with a car chase that's pretty nuts,
yeah,
to this, you know, death by rebar pile, resuscitation by electricity, and what was the other thing, a cat or something?
Yeah, we should mention that they just say electricity, but the truth is it starts out with a cat laying on him.
Yeah. Yeah, which is wild.
Which reminded me of the cat. And then, you know, the cat's laying on him and he's doing the rotoscope glow that they used to have.
Man, they love the rotoscoped electricity in this.
They do. And he starts to glow and then lightning starts to hit him. And then I think the best way to kind of describe the Blue Jean Monster, it's like this other side. It's like a Jekyll and Hyde / Frankenstein story. But he's kind of like a superhero, but not a superhero. So kind of, I would say the best way to kind of describe him, because of the contact lenses and everything else, he's kind of Hulk-like, kind of like a Lou Ferrigno Hulk-like.
There is such a moment that feels like Ferrigno Hulk.
Oh yeah.
So it's like my note was, where's my note? Because it was like, oh, here it is: Thriller eyes, Cosby sweater, Ferrigno Hulk strength and moves.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, that's him. Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. And, you know, even something, and I couldn't help, you can't help but think of something like Dead Heat.
Right? That was kind of when I was kind of going back and doing some research on the movie and stuff and everything. They said they kind of compared it to that, like Hong Kong's version of Dead Heat. Now, I think Dead Heat's kind of a different vibe than this. Well, a totally different vibe than this when you really think about some of the conversations that are had in this in a moment that I don't think is in Dead Heat for sure, involving a boob job, but
no, but there's a part involving a tanning bed, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. So yeah, I guess there is some stuff. Yeah. So just kind of Dead Heat-ish in a way.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Hollywood is never going to push it as far as Hong Kong would.
No, not even close. And so, you know, this one, I want you to tell me. So, I mean, the story's pretty basic, right? We got a disorganized triad gang is going to rob a bank. He gets a tip. He accidentally gets buried under some rebar, electrocuted and brought to life. And you think to yourself, okay, this sounds like another Saturday night of me who listens to this podcast watching a movie I found. Because, you know, people who listen to this show are the kind of people who would pursue a movie like this. So you think that's about as far as it's going to go. Now there's going to be some more violence and stuff, but the action and the fighting is actually pretty good. But
it is.
The other side of the coin of this movie is the total dedication to absurdity between some conversations characters have, the boob joke, and there's one other moment I can't remember off the top of my head. Well, I mean, the moments with the hole in the stomach.
Oh, man.
That are just rough. They're just rough to watch. they're category three in the sense that they're just so gross.
They are gross.
And the noodles look like calamari too. They don't look like noodles.
Ugh.
I know. I had that same reaction when he's pulling that noodle out. I was like, oh, I quit. And they just stayed on it. I was like, oh my God. Could stay on. And then that other character comes in and I'm like, no, this isn't going to happen. And it did. And then he had diarrhea. But that, I don't think that's the most shocking moment in the movie. And I don't honestly think the breast scene is, I don't know if we want to talk about it yet, but I don't think that's the most shocking scene in the movie. I think the most shocking moment in the movie comes when she has her friend over and they're talking about her husband. And they're talking about her pregnancy. That's the most shocking moment because she says, and I quote this, guys, she says that she doesn't want to have sex while she's pregnant because she's afraid it'll give the baby a flat nose.
Which is
a fearful thing for Chinese people. I don't want to speculate as to why. I have my opinions on that, but I will keep them to myself. But then her friend says, no, the baby can avoid it. And don't worry about it anyway. The baby likes it when he does that because the baby sucks it. This is what she says to the other character. You heard me right. Now, everywhere that's listening to this podcast right now is like, what kind of stuff are you guys watching?
Hong Kong.
Hong Kong in the 90s. That is what is said. And I'm like, I'm just sitting there going, oh my God, she just said that. And I had to rewind it because I was like, surely I didn't read that wrong. No, I didn't read it wrong. That's what it said. And I was like, that is some transgressive, crazy stuff right there. You could not pull that off nowadays. You could not.
No.
Not even
no
close.
No chance.
It's just insane.
No chance.
Insane. And then she kind of sets him up with a hooker. And this is all ludicrous. This is the comedy stuff, some of the comedy stuff, right? She sets him up with a hooker. He's being enticed by this hooker who has big breast. And, you know, she's on the other side. It's this comedic beats and everything else. But the hooker gets him all excited. And when he gets excited or gets upset, he turns into this Hulk-like blue jean monster because he wears jeans.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens, Will?
Well, I don't know if I've ever seen, I mean, I'm sure I would like to think I maybe have, but we get a breast job that is punctured pretty significantly, deflates pretty significantly with the liquid spraying everywhere, spraying this way and that.
Yeah. Yogurt ropes. But there was it was gross. I mean, but at the same time, I was like, what is going on? What am I watching? This is definitely one of those movies where if you have a significant other or children and you're watching this by yourself, make sure the TV is facing a way that you can look and cover any entrance that comes into the room.
I'll tell you what, when you watch a Hong Kong film from this era, at least once in that film, even if the film's dog shit, you will say, I cannot, either one of two things. I cannot believe they just did that. Or I have literally never seen that in all the time I've been watching movies. For better or worse.
Yeah. Just bizarre. Crazy. I just.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the stuff that happens from like the midpoint on is like, what is this? What are we watching? The movie is junky in a way. Like a lot of these films are, you know, but massively entertaining. So, you know, I'll say that. But yeah, I don't know if you want to, anything else you want to talk about it, go ahead.
Lots of farts.
Yeah. So if you don't if you don't like fart humor, then maybe not your movie.
How about that allergic reaction to smoke?
Yeah. That's actually the thing that triggers him, right? Yeah. The hooker starts smoking a cigarette and he,
or even earlier on, power steering does in the car.
Oh yeah. That's before he even has the incident, right? So like he's I'm allergic to cigarette smoke.
He goes nuts, man. He's coughing. He almost kills a bunch of kids driving.
Yeah.
In true
Hong Kong fashion, too. Power steering almost runs over a handicapped person, and they make fun of the handicapped person, of course.
Yeah. Like I said, it's trauma mixed with Fast Times at Ridgemont High and like a few weird moments early on with Gucci and her friends. We get this weird, if you've seen the film, this will make sense, the Big Mac breast test.
Okay, so... Yeah, as weird as some of the other things I've already talked about are, two things. One, it's awesome to hear you say the Big Mac breast test. That just sounds like something that we should probably discuss, and that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Two, they say two extra large Big Macs. These will, you have to agree, these are the largest Big Macs you've ever seen before in your life.
This is correct.
Those are half pound burgers, if not a pound. I need McDonald's to have burgers like those.
Yes.
They look delicious. And of course, that also leads to some humor involving a fat girl and fat girl jokes. And, you know, again, it's not a politically correct thing. So if you're sensitive, you might not get as much enjoyment out of it as some would, you know?
Yeah. It's, again, Hong Kong is not known for their subtleties and or sensitivities.
No.
But here we are.
Yep. There we are. I mean, the movie is, you know, the Blu-ray itself looks good. I mean, it doesn't look amazing, but it looks really good. I have seen this before. I don't know how I've seen it before, but I know I've seen it before because I remember the contact lenses and I remember thinking it was like the Hulk. But the thing is, I wonder if I've seen the film or if I've seen clips because my memory's a bit foggy and I don't recall the breast scene. I don't recall the breast scene mostly. I don't recall that conversation she has in the apartment either. So I'm thinking maybe I didn't see this. I'm thinking maybe I've just seen clips over the years.
A few of the kind of greatest hits, right?
Yeah, like somebody talking about Category 3 films or something in like some YouTube video and then, you know, seeing a small snippet from the Blue Jean Monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about the only way I think I've seen it because I don't think I've seen it before. I'd be surprised if I have. I don't know how I would have. Unless I ordered a bootleg Chinese VHS tape or a Laserdisc or something.
Or VCD or something, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's all. You got anything else?
A couple more things. We talked about the Rebar, Wild. What is this? There's a very good... I don't know. There's... yeah. We talked about Dead Heat. We talked about Fuyan Xing's lovely, wonderful face. Lots of wacky sexual hijinks we mentioned. How about this? Fuyan Xing's fashion sense. He kind of like, there's moments where he's got like this long sleeve tee tucked in. He's like a dad going to Olive Garden.
Yeah, that's what he looks like.
You got to love it.
Yeah.
It looks pretty amazing.
Kind of looks like the 90s version of John Cena in Blockers.
Yes. And that squirting breast implant scene also featured a baby dick poster.
Yeah, there's some weird moments in that whole apartment that I don't understand.
The sort of set design or production design in like Italian horror films where you get like a random like Garfield poster or something. That's cool. But Hong Kong will have like a baby dick poster.
It's like, what the hell is going on?
There you go. The pin cushion in the ass looked painful.
Yes. Yes, but it did.
He was a smooth operator. He goes, oh, my wallet went right into my wallet. There's lots of these kind of like wacky sort of hijinks with, you know, him zapping himself with like an iron or someone trying to prove he's, you know, what's going on with him. Another thing, you know, we failed to mention here, we often talk about net confoundment. Mm. But have we ever seen a net made of bras? Because now we have.
I think this is a first, yes. I don't think we ever have seen
first.
This. I think I've seen a rope made of bras before, but I can't remember what that's from. But never a net. No, this is a new one.
There's momentary confoundment with the net of bras. We said Jun Kunimura shows up. Something we have seen many times is the old warehouse shootout.
Yep, we get that here.
We get a great Hong Kong fire stunt jumps off a building. There was minimal fire suit used.
Yes, minimal fire suit used and minimal stunt padding.
And maximal burns to skin.
Ooh, man, yeah, it looked rough. It's a good stunt.
Yes. Good stunt. Talk about heat, man.
Ooh, man, that stunt hurt. Twice.
Yeah, they don't play, man.
On fire, and he took a major bump. Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. Good Lord.
Yeah, and it was an ugly moment.
That's just sensory overload. The fire, then the bump.
I hope he got paid pretty well for that stunt.
He didn't.
He probably didn't.
Nope.
Probably got one of them leftover hand pawed Big Macs.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's craft services that day, man. Yep. Those are all my notes.
All right. I don't have a whole lot more to add. The disc itself, like I said, looks nice. Not a lot of special features on there. They got an interview with the assistant director on the disc. Which I don't know if he ever went on and did anything or not. I think maybe he did. I'm trying to think of his name real quick. Let me see if I can pull it up here. Sam Lung. So I don't know if he did anything else or not, but that was the assistant director. And he's got some stories about kind of behind the scenes and what took place and kind of this era of Hong Kong cinema, which is kind of fun. And yeah, again, it's on Blu-ray. 88 Films put it out. I want to thank 88 Films for that, but yeah, this movie, it's like so many of these movies, it's hard to describe. Now, I don't know if our listeners know, but at one point we announced it, but we didn't follow through with it because scheduling has been so tricky for us. But you know, we were going to do Run and Kill, and yep. That's another one of these type of films, and it goes for it in other ways. But this one's more kind of absurdist than that one. That one is more, let's get absolutely nuts and see what happens. And let's go to the darkest of dark places in some ways, with what happens in the film. This one is like, let's be as absurd as possible and people will laugh at it. So in some ways it's kind of like a gore comedy. It's not overly gory. But gory enough and kind of freaky enough and kind of, I think your trauma comparison is pretty apt, because I didn't really think about that until you said it, but it kind of reminded me of, because sometimes trauma would avoid blood and go for like goop and just, yeah, you know, juice and other bodily fluids, right? And they would still be just as gross. And that's what this film kind of goes for, because it kind of goes for orifices and just slimy stuff and just body horror in some weird way. But not overly bloody. It's a very strange mix. But no, I enjoyed the film. I think it's a good, fun movie. This is one of those ones I think that would be fun with a crowd. I think it does have a little bit of downtime.
Yeah.
Is probably the biggest problem. Is there some moments where it's kind of just a little slow, but for the most part, it moves along pretty quick for the whatever 90 to 100 minutes it is. And it just kind of keeps going. And, yeah, I'm glad we did it for the show. Hopefully it'll get a little bit of a push and people will check it out. I'm sure there's somebody out there that this will become one of their new favorite films. That's the kind of movie this is. Like, it's not an amazingly made film, but it's one of those movies where somebody's going to see it and be like, dude, that was a trip. Like, I'm going to keep watching that till the end of time. It's one of those kind of movies, right? So
yeah.
But, yeah, that's it. I'll get to kick it over to you for Make or Breaks, MVTs. What you got?
Make or Break. This is going to sound weird because it's completely outside the spirit of the film, but it's the heist and the shootout. The reason I say that is it is really well done. And even though it's kind of against the spirit of the film, it kind of reminds us, hey, listen, like, I'm not a hack. You know, I can make something that's going to be a fan favorite or something that, you know, this film is made very much to kind of get everyone in the seats and have a good time, but it's still got some moments that really made me wish that we got more of this stuff from Kai Ming Lai, right? Like, you know, Imp Solid, which I've talked about many moons ago. But yeah, it's solid stuff. MVT, this is absolutely the Sammy logic. Fuyan Xing.
Yeah, it's a good one.
God love him. God love him. What a face.
Yeah, I
agree. What a lovable turn.
Because
If he sucked, if he was unlikable or just boring, this film could have been more of a slog, because Wykit C is power steering. I just despise him. Right? Gucci's fine. She's a little over the top. Su Feng Wong is fine, but she's in a bit of a thankless role. And there's not enough Jun Kunimura. But Fuyan Xing, man, he brings it. He's not even likable. He's lovable despite what he's going through. And my score for this one is a 6.5 out of 10. It's a good sort of golden era Hong Kong film, not a great one, but there's stuff in this, as we always say, that you'll you'll have never seen before.
And you'll never forget.
Never forget.
I guarantee you there's at least two scenes in here you'll never forget.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to go, yeah, make or break for me. I'm going to go with, I'm going to go, man, I almost want to go with that dialogue scene between the two ladies because it's so far out there.
Oh, man.
But I can't do that. I'm going to go with the boob scene. I'm going to go with that. I mean, it is a true make or break. Yeah, it's a true make or break scene. That whole stuff, it's all crazy. So I'm going to go with that. I'm with you on the MVT though. It's definitely Fuan Chan or what's his name? Fuan Xin.
Fuan Xin.
Yeah. He's got one of those faces. He's always been a lot of fun to see. He's great in this. He's just great in this. You know, the one thing about Category 3 films we don't really talk about a lot is though it gave actors like him and Kent Chang and Anthony Wong before he became, you know, the Anthony Wong we know and everything else. It gave these guys all a chance, you know, to star in films and everything else. You know, Fatty,
oh, yeah.
Kent Chang, who's kind of affectionately known as Fatty sometimes in some circles. You know, he's not a prototypical hero or anything, but he's in quite a few of these films. He's in Run and Kill, actually. He's the lead of Run and Kill.
Oh, God. He's in a ton of them.
Yeah, him and Simon Yam. And Simon Yam's in a bunch of them, right? So It's pretty crazy that these guys got, but they got their, you know, you got to start somewhere. And it's, you know, it's great that these guys got their start and they've gone on to do some great stuff. Simon Yam's the one that always kind of befuddles me because he's kind of become almost like a, I don't know if he is, but he's, you know, he's such a good looking guy. He's almost coming like a sex symbol and he come out of these kind of dark, twisted movies.
Oh, yeah.
And Anthony Wong, of course, we talked about him too, like Mr. Cool, right? But he come out of these just really dark and twisted movies. What was your score again? I think I may have
6.5.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. I'm going to go 6.75, just a little bit higher, but not much. I think it's a junky B movie and, pretty messed up, but man, it's a lot of fun. It's very rewatchable. And just super bizarre. Yeah. I can't recommend it enough in that way. So I'm going to go 6.75. So there we go. All right. I want to thank 88 Films. For sending us the film and checking it out. Hopefully we'll do some more work with him in the future. I don't know. We'll see. Will, what are we doing next week, buddy?
Well, can I just say one more thing before I get off this? Do you know this is, I think, the third film with blue jeans in the title that we've done?
Really?
Well, we did Shakedown. Did we not do Shakedown?
I think you and somebody else did Shakedown, yes. I don't think I was on that one. Somebody. I can't remember doing Shakedown. But I remember Shakedown being on there.
The James Glickenhaus jam? Yeah. But it's fun. What's known as, I think, Blue Jean Cop or...
Oh, yeah, it is. It is kind of known as Blue Jean. I forgot about that.
It's a fun one.
What was the other one?
Cop in Blue Jeans, the Italian film.
Ah, yes. How about that?
Yeah.
Blue Jeans.
This is the third.
A lot of Blue Jeans in our life.
Very, very different films. What a trilogy. The Blue Jean Cop trilogy, man.
Yeah, how about that?
Three countries, whole lot of denim.
Whole lot of denim.
Palance, Million, Elliot, Weller, Fuyan Xing.
Well, I mean, denim's been a big part of our show from the beginning, right?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
That reminds me, I should tell you on the air that I just recently found a copy of FUBAR. Really cheap, and I bought it on Blu-ray.
Oh, have you seen it before?
I have. Yeah, yes.
Incredible.
Yep.
National treasure. So we are actually. It's been a while since this guy's been on the show. We're gonna revisit the wonderful world of Nobuhiko Obayashi, a filmmaker that I think is endlessly fascinating. Last full disclosure, the last time we had one of his films on the show, I was almost in tears on the show. In fact, I did kind of break down on the show a little bit when we reviewed The Discarnates. I'd lost my mom, watched this film, and had a little moment on the show live with you and the Prince of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that was a heavy moment. But I think he's a wonderful filmmaker who doesn't get his flowers enough. Of course, he also directed House, which everyone knows and loves, but... We're going to be talking about a film that, to me, you know, it's a little more Antonioni than some of his stuff. It deals with sort of memory and sort of how we remember things and whatnot. And it's called His Motorbike, Her Island.
Yeah, I've never seen this. I've always wanted to because I love the title.
Yeah, good title, man.
Yeah, because the title, of course, is kind of provocative. Like, I don't know what it means. I don't know anything about the movie. So,
yeah.
Looking forward
to checking this out. Ricky Takeuchi returning to the GGTMC. Nathan, nice. Somewhere Nathan Stewart will be very happy.
Nice. Good deal. All right. Make sure to check out our brother and sister shows. You guys know who they are, but I am going to read them off to you anyway, because if I don't, I will forget somebody. But not a Night of the Living podcast, Married with Clickers, Not a Bomb, Watch Kid Plus, Feminine Critique, Chinstroker versus Punter, Love That Album, See Here podcast, Caliber Now from Outer Space, Raiders of the Podcast, John Show on YouTube, and now for something a little bit different. I think he's taking a little bit of a break, but I think he's coming back pretty soon. So make sure to check out all of those guys. I promise you, you won't be disappointed. We will be back in a week with his motorbike, Her Island. And with that, I will say adios.
Adios.
Thanks for listening. You can find the gentleman at ggtmc.com. And you can email the gentleman at midnightcinema@gmail.com. Thank you.